There's a reason why it's 24 hours. It's an endurance race. You have three drivers. They trade off 8 hours apiece. And the whole point is, like, can you get this incredible machine to actually, you know, run at peak performance for 24 straight hours? That's why it's such a challenge.
Are 40% of Americans really overpaying for their car loans? That might just be the case. Today, I'm speaking with Alex Rouse, VP GM Auto at Upstart, an AI-powered lending platform for auto loans. We discuss whether the US credit system is broken for car buyers, CEO secrets learned from Jeff Bezos, blowing an engine at 24 hours of Le Mans, and much more.
What's up, everyone? This is Car Dealership Guy. You're listening to the Car Dealership Guy podcast, which is my effort to give you access to the most transparent insights into the car market. Well, before we get into the show, this episode is brought to you by the Auto Hauler Exchange. Auto Hauler Exchange is changing how people who send and carry cars work together. Now, if you need to send a car, you can directly work with carriers all over the country. And if you carry cars, you don't have to look through brokers' lists to find good, fair jobs anymore. By eliminating the middleman, all shipments on the Auto Hauler Exchange come directly from the owner of the vehicle being shipped, with carriers receiving real shipment opportunities at direct pricing. Auto Hauler Exchange helps shippers and carriers work together easily and clearly, adding transparency and making better partnerships. Get off the auto hauling roller coaster by getting on the Auto Hauler Exchange. To learn more, visit autohaulerexchange.com or click the link in the show notes below. Lastly, this episode is also brought to you by Upstart. I'd like to thank Upstart for coming on as a guest and also supporting this podcast. Alex Rouse on the CDG podcast. Alex, welcome.
Thank you. Very excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you on. Hey, I got to ask you, was looking through your LinkedIn before this. What's this with your involvement in the Le Mans race in France? I hope I'm even pronouncing that correctly. Tell us a little bit about your background and being involved in racing, which I didn't expect from someone involved in tech early in their career. So that was a surprise for me.
Yeah, so I've always had two passions in my life, the technology and then cars. So like I grew up, you know, my house was one where, you know, I was always working in the garage with my dad and my brothers working on some kind of car. And so I've always been a car guy. And then, you know, when I was in college, I was actually trying to get some work done on my car. And so I was just calling up, you know, shops to get work done. And I happened to call a shop that was an American Le Mans series team, which I didn't even know they were. But, you know, it turned out that they needed help. And so I have a twin brother, and so we couldn't have been more eager to help them. And so the very next day we left for Lime Rock Raceway in Connecticut. And so that sort of, you know, kicked off that season with that team. And the season ended with us getting opportunity to go race in the 24 Hours of Le Mans, this, you know, incredibly historic race in France. And, you know, it was just such an incredible opportunity. Like, I can remember being there and, you know, walking down the raceway and the finish line, and there's these massive grandstands on either side, and Corvette race team is there, Aston Martin, you know, their team is there, Audi and Porsche, they're all there. And just, you know, it was like pinching myself, like I couldn't believe that I was there. You know, it's a difficult race. There's a reason why it's 24 hours. It's an endurance race.
For anyone listening, right, what does that even mean, 24 hours? How does that work?
Well, it's like, you have three drivers, they trade off 8 hours apiece. And the whole point is, like, can you get this incredible machine to actually, you know, run at peak performance for 24 straight hours? So that's why it's such a challenge. And so we were in what's called a prototype race. That's sort of the cars that look kind of like F1 cars. That was the type of car that we had. And we would go back and forth in the lead in our class. And at hour 17, our engine failed. And so I think we broke a valve or something. And so our car was out, even though, you know, we were, you know, at the lead at the time, we were doing so good.
Oh my.
And so, yeah, it's common. Like that's sort of a normal thing to happen in these races, but I didn't care, honestly. It was like, I got the opportunity to do that, be a part of this historic race. It was discouraging, but, you know, it was still an awesome experience, and, you know, couldn't believe I was there.
Well, look, all I can tell you is I've never driven a car for 17 hours, but I think at some point some people left the car turned on at the lot for 24 hours. So that's the closest I've been to having a car on for that long. I'm sure someone listening to this can think of that one lot attendant at the dealership 10 years ago that left the car running overnight. It's happened. I have to admit. So not proud of it,
But that was definitely, that was my most memorable 17 plus hour experience of a car running. So
that's hilarious.
Well, I love to hear it. Dude, you've had a very interesting career leading you up to Upstart where you are today. And you're working on lots of innovation with just automotive lending. You know, I built an online auto retailer, which many people listening already know this. One of the biggest pain points was lending. I would say lending and titling, probably even more so than like the physical world stuff. Just lending at scale, especially indirect lending at dealership when you're not the lender yourself or buy here, pay here, it gets really complicated. And more than just complicated, I think, again, lots of people could probably resonate with this, but it's really tough to create a good customer experience because there's so many touch points in the process. It's just not smooth, right? So we're going to dig into that. I want to get your take on how we can fix that, where we are and where we're headed. Before we even get there, you had stints at Amazon. I mean, you co-founded a company. You've done some stuff. So give us the run-up. Like, tell us a little bit more about yourself from, you know, your time co-founding a company, then Amazon and Adam Tickets I saw. Just give us the high-level overview.
Sure. So after, you know, went to business school with, you know, wanted to get into technology. And from there, went to Amazon. And so, you know, I was at Amazon for about 5 years. It's an incredible place to get your start. I think of it as like, it's like a 5-year long boot camp. Like it's a really intense place to work, but the training that you receive there is just incredible. And so the area that I worked on was Amazon's digital devices. So Kindle Fire, Fire TV, and Fire Phone. And so that was really the tip of the spear for the company at that time. Like it was, you know, Amazon really felt like that consumers were creating their relationships with consumer tech companies, and it was now or never. So the whole company was sort of pivoted to invest in these devices. And so because of that, I got the opportunity to work with Jeff. And that was an incredible experience. So I can remember we would have reviews with him where we'd actually be like walking through the customer experience for these devices, like, you know, buying apps or whatever it was. And he's like, this guy's over like this massive company, and he's taking the time to get into the actual customer experience. And he's giving us feedback on, you know, any click, in any page that was confusing. And so I just remember being blown away that he would go into that level of depth on the things that he cared about. And so, yeah, it was an incredible experience.
I love that because it's, again, that level of attention to detail is how you just build great products. And it's like, you're right. Like at that scale of a company, that's pretty remarkable, right? That he gets down to that level of detail within one org when you have this, you know, conglomerate.
And I listened to your podcast with Jay, who was talking about, you know, Elon. It's a very similar thing there. Like Steve Jobs, very similar thing. You know, our CEO, Dave, like he also, you know, he's down listening to calls from our borrowers. So, you know, yeah, I think it's, you know, those founder CEO types, like they get right into the weeds and they're given really, really good feedback for what they think is most important.
Yeah. What about your time in the startup world? What was that about?
Yeah. So, you know, building products at Amazon, you know, built products that were used by millions of people, generated, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. But it's, you know, what's the saying? Like, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. Like if you're building products at Amazon, like product's probably going to be successful. And so you've just got this massive tailwind that is the Amazon platform. And so, you know, really wanted a chance to try that on my own without sort of the tailwind from Amazon. And so left with a handful of guys I worked with at Amazon. Then we started a company in the entertainment space. And the goal of that company was really, so it's, you know, movie ticketing. And we really wanted to create, there's sort of two opportunities we're going after. We wanted to create a more social, more mobile movie-going experience. And then we thought there was a large opportunity to improve the way movie tickets are priced. So like movie tickets, like your movies have all of this empty inventory that doesn't get sold, and yet they're still priced in kind of a, you know, one-size-fits-all kind of way. And so there's, you know, all these other industries, hotels and airlines, et cetera, where there's you know, yield management, dynamic pricing kind of thing. And so we thought that's a huge opportunity. And so, you know, we raised a bunch of money. We couldn't get movie theaters and studios to cooperate in order to get that dynamic pricing part. We got really, really close, but we could never get them to sort of get over the hump. We did build a great product. We built a product that, you know, I think is better than like Fandango would be the competition there. So, you know, you can download it, give it a try, but it's, you know, what the lesson there is really like, it can't just be a better product. It has to be a way better product to get people to switch from whatever it is that they're doing today to your new thing. And so, yeah, I know you started. I don't know if that resonates for you.
Well, you know, we've been using this line and I really like this one, right? So ready for this one? Painkillers, not vitamins.
Totally. Right?
Like we've been using this line a lot because as we think about things and we think about content, I talk about all the time, my industry job board, which is free to the industry, but like everything we're doing is like, okay, is this a painkiller or is this a vitamin? Right. And again, I've used this framework even as a dealer, right? When introducing a new marketing promotion or something, but like, are we really doing something that people give a shit about? Or is this just like, okay, you know, maybe are we really offering an incentive to bring for someone to come in now to buy a car or whatever? Or is it again, so I think that painkillers versus vitamins, like it's a saying that we've really adopted and we think about it all the time.
I think that's totally right on 100%.
This episode is brought to you by my very own Car Dealership Guy industry job board. CDGjobs.com, my industry job board connecting the best talent in automotive with the best companies, will remain absolutely free for CDG listeners to post and fill available roles at their companies. This free job board is for anyone in automotive, vendors, dealers, lenders, manufacturers, auto tech, everyone. Already, over 100 companies have posted open positions, including Lithia Motors, Recurrent, Credit Acceptance, Viros Credit, Cars Commerce, Shift Digital, Plug, Full Path, Westlake, Trade Pending. You get the point. The best part is that when these companies hire through cdgjobs.com, they are hiring the most informed candidates in the marketplace. So don't hesitate. You can add your open roles today by visiting cdgjobs.com or clicking the link in the show notes below. That's cdgjobs.com.
So bring us full circle, right? Today, you're at Upstart. Tell us about why you joined Upstart back to auto, right? You started with auto. You're now back at auto. No, I'm sure you're nowhere near your end here, so I don't want to make it seem like you're at the end, but why back to auto? Why Upstart? What are you working on nowadays?
Yeah. So maybe I'll give you a little bit of history about kind of Upstart, what was founded, the mission it's going after. So the company was founded 12 years ago by a couple ex-Googlers, Dave and Anna, and then Paul, our technical CTO.
Dave follows me. I peeped that follow.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Oh.
Yeah, so the goal of the company was really, established with a mission of expanding access to credit. And so credit is an incredibly important part of our lives. It's, very, very important in the auto industry. And what you might not know is that it's really inefficient. So the right people do not get access to loans at the right prices. And so there's this stat that we use to show that, and it's that only 40% of the population has access to prime credit. But if you look at all of the, if you look at the people who have never defaulted on a loan, that's actually 80%. So if the world was working perfectly, 80% of people would have access to that low-cost capital, but it's not what's happening today. You might—
Wait, so recap that for me for a second. 80% have never defaulted on a loan of the US population?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And 40% have credit.
40% have access to prime credit.
Yes, low cost credit. Got it. Okay, keep going.
And so, why is that? Well, it's because a lot of the financial system, when banks are making those lending decisions, they're really, a lot of it is based on the credit score, the FICO score. And that really, that was invented in the 80s and really hasn't changed very much. So think about that three-digit number. It's the same three-digit number if you're buying a $400,000 house, a $50,000 car, or a $10,000 loan to, build a deck. And so you can imagine the risk profile of those different things. They're incredibly different, but yet we're using sort of the same tool. And so, what we've done is really say, there's a way to do this better. In 2012, AI was just beginning. Now, of course, it's everywhere, but we can, at that time we saw, this technology is going to change the world. And lending really is the perfect use case for AI. There's tons of data available to feed these big models. And the impact, if you can do it better, is so meaningful to people and to businesses. And so anyway, that's kind of the mission the company was founded to try to, take on. And it's really just these two components. You take more data, you take more sophisticated modeling techniques, and with that, you can make better predictions of risk. You can make better predictions of risk. You can find people that today lenders are saying no to them because they think they're too risky. Well, we can actually see that they're not that risky. And so we can approve them. And that's access to credit. That's more sales volume. And then there's the flip side. There's people
interesting.
The flip side is like people who are, traditional lenders would think they are not risky, but we can see, hey, actually that person is actually risky. Decline them. And so you may know this, a big part of your interest rate is actually to cover the losses of other defaulters. And so if you can remove defaults, you can actually lower rates for everybody. And what that looks like to a dealership, higher approvals, lower rates, more room for back end. So kind of all interchangeable.
So where is this inefficiency? I mean, is this primarily with the subprime segment, right? Where is that? Where are you seeing the most inefficiency with lending?
Yeah, great question. So like one way to think about this is, when a borrower is like, let's call them a traditionally prime borrower, they've got a high credit score, they make a lot of money. Like, it's pretty easy to tell if that person's low risk. So where it gets more complicated is when that picture is not as clear. And so what we find is, you can think about it as lower down the credit spectrum, there's this big range. There are people with 550, 600 FICOs that have the risk profile of someone with a 750 FICO. And that's a segment we call hidden prime. And so by having models that can identify those people, we're able to provide them with a type of rate that they would see if they were, if they were prime. And so that's one of, as we build this out in auto, there's sort of three segments that we've found that are where we're already beginning to demonstrate the value of AI lending. One of them is this like hidden prime segment. We're able to find those people, and dealers send us those types of deals disproportionately, as you might expect. There's a couple others. Another one is thin files. Like, thin files are tough. It's tough, it's hard to know whether that, what's the true risk.
Like, not a lot of history on the credit.
That's right. Yeah. So they have very limited credit history, a very small number of loans, if any, in their credit file. And so, our models are very good at actually sensing the risk of those people. And then the last one is on age collateral. So older cars. So, when our model prices someone at an applicant level, basically what we're doing is we're determining when we think they might, whether they'll default and when. We're determining when we think they might prepay, because that plays in, if someone prepays their loan, it's a good thing. Like, they're not defaulting, but it also means you're not getting the return that you expected. So we need to know that. And then we model their specific car and the value of that car over time. And so, we found inefficiency in cars that are 1 year to 5 years old. And what it means is we're able to provide those deals disproportionately lower rates, and we see higher conversion from our dealers.
So why specifically, when you talk about the older units or like age collateral, explain that to me one more time. Where's the inefficiency there that you're able to bridge?
Yeah, so think of it as like the way that traditional lenders are coming up with those rates might be, it could be simple rate tables. And, they're saying, as the car gets older, we're bumping the rate by X basis points. Our approach is totally different. We're actually forecasting the depreciation of that vehicle, the recovery value of that vehicle. And we're not saying, if it's a two-year-old car, add 50 basis points, it's a three-year-old, whatever. Yeah, and so that lets us, by doing that, we can provide lower rates there.
I want to ask you about the market share of different types of lending, right? So I talked a lot about in end of 22 and like early 23 about the rise of credit unions. Credit unions went from like 15% market share of all auto loans to like 30% in a very short period of time. Then over the last 6 months or so, credit unions have receded. They don't have unlimited cash or capital to put up. Captives have grown again, right? So there's this constant shift in who is actually lending. And look, traditional banks, lenders, they're always kind of in the middle. But where do we go from here, right? As a dealer listening, or even as a consumer, like, where do you think the sweet spot is with respect to lenders as we look out over the next year or so? What are your thoughts?
So the way we think about it is, our platform is really one where we're developing a network of dealerships who are sending us loan applications, and we work with all kinds of lenders. So we work with traditional subprime lenders, banks, and credit unions. And you can think of them as all competing for the volume that's coming through our channel. And so we've seen the same thing you've seen. Like, we have 100 banks and credit unions on our platform today. Over the last few years, we've seen a big increase in the number of credit unions that use our platform. Liquidity has been tighter. Like, they have reserves they need, as losses increase, they have to, maintain these reserves. And so now what we're beginning to see is, so they tightened up, there was less capital to lend. We're starting to see that free up. So we're actually starting to see our credit unions and our traditional banks come back with more.
Oh, interesting.
Looking for more capital to lend. And we're still early in that, but definitely we're seeing green shoots compared to where we've been for the past 2 years.
Oh, that's interesting. Especially having seen, credit unions sort of, they were starting to dry up, but I mean, everything's in cycles, I guess. I want to ask you about what you're seeing in the market, given your access to dealers and, of course, having all this data. But before that, I do have a completely separate question. I saw this on your LinkedIn as well, but there's been a lot of buzz over the last week about this eStart coalition. And I'd love for you to explain what this is. And for context to the audience, right? Again, if anyone here listening has sold a car online, or maybe even you bought a car online, right? You know that some of the biggest pain points are lending and titling. Right? Again, I dealt with this firsthand. Titling was a huge headache. So I got to say, I was pretty surprised when I saw this new initiative where all these, lots of really influential companies in automotive got together and said, hey, we are going to work on bringing digital titling for the industry. Where when I hear this, to me, again, this is painkillers. Like, this is big. And so tell me about, like, what is this eStart Coalition? How did you Upstart get involved in this? What does it mean for our industry?
Yeah, so we have two businesses. We have our digital retail indirect lending business and also a direct-to-consumer refinance business. And so in both, our vision of the future is a completely digital purchase experience, end to end. And so what you might not know is that there are still many states that require wet signatures on documents that need to be sent mailed to the DMV.
Oh, yeah.
And so, if you're not in one of those states, like, it sounds crazy, but it's actually a real thing, and it's not a small number of states. And so in order to get to that, that vision that we're going for, we need the DMVs to change their processes. We need them to accept digital signatures without having to mail paperwork back and forth. And so it's so much better. It's sort of amazing that we have to do this. It's such a better experience. It's, lower friction for the consumer, and it's much lower cost to maintain operational processes, to manage those titles and mail them back and forth. Like, it makes, lending, it's a real component to the cost structure of lending. And so we joined forces with Carvana and DocuSign and 17 others, and we're pushing the states to modernize the way their DMV processes and move towards e-signature.
How realistic do you think this is, and in what time frame? And I know you can't guess this, but just roughly speaking, what do you think is a time frame for something like this? I just think that this would be game changing. If every state online titling, it would be make life so much easier.
So yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we hopefully, it's not something that's that far away. We actually pushed this during COVID. We actually took states that were required digital signatures, required ink signatures. And we actually just started sending them digital copies just to see if they would approve it, because we knew it was during COVID. And what we saw, they did. Like, we had a handful of states that actually began accepting it that way, just because they had the need. And so that's what gives me hope that, like, maybe this won't, go at a DMV pace. Maybe this will actually, be at a pace that we can get this done in the next, hopefully small number of years.
You also mentioned earlier your involvement in digital retailing, which I talk a lot about, the just evolution of the right way to do online car buying and what makes sense, what's kind of hoopla. So give us a little bit of an overview of what you're doing on the digital retailing front.
Yeah. So, you know, we thought about getting into the auto market. We wanted to bring our AI lending to dealerships. And we were trying to think about the best way to do that. And what I haven't talked a little much about, but a thing that we you know, is part of our mission, something we're really passionate about, and that's building simple, streamlined experiences. And so, you know, on our core business, our personal loan business, we have, you know, 80% of our loans require no steps, no documentation. It's a completely instant rate and funding experience. And so we, you know, as we thought about getting into automotive, what we wanted to do is we wanted to completely build a seamless e-commerce car buying experience. And so that's why we've gone to market through our own digital retail software. That digital retail software has, you know, it has three parts. It has what we call online, in-store, and then lending. Our online product, you know, that's a product that lives on a dealership's website. You know, it helps the consumer. They can essentially build their deal. They can add their trade. They can explore different financing options. They can browse add-ons, you know, F&I products at home on their couch. Primary user for that would be the internet director at the dealership. And our value proposition then, what we're trying is, you know, we're trying to, our dealerships see, you know, on average, like 50% higher lead to close conversion. So that's why, you know, the B2C manager cares about that product. Then we've got our in-store product. Imagine that customer, they walk in to the dealership. This product facilitates the end-to-end car buying experience. So the salesperson can have an iPad, or they could, you know, they could be sitting at their desk on their computer, and they can bring up that customer. They can see exactly what they were looking at. They can see the car they were looking at, the payments they were looking at. They've got their trade-in information, and they can pick up right there, you know, and keep going. So if you're a consumer, that feels like magic. Like you just walk in, they know about you, and they're ready to sort of move forward. And if you're a dealer, what that results for is kind of better satisfaction, you know, higher customer satisfaction. It's a much faster process. So we see 90 minutes saved on average. And if you can save time, you know, that creates a ton of efficiency. So we've got an in-store process that facilitates sale process, facilitates the desking process, fully digital pencils, communication back and forth. Like we're trying to make that process, instead of using 8 different tools to manage that process, we're trying to give our dealers one tool that integrates with all of the tools they have on their platform. And then of course we've got lending. So on the lending side, you know, what we're trying to do there is make that instant approvals, no manual effort trying to figure out what kind of F&I products can fit with that, you know, in this particular lender. And of course we're trying to approve more borrowers and give them, you know, more room for backend.
All right. So broadly speaking, right, if we zoom out, what are challenges right now that dealers are coming to you with, right? What are some like pain points that your dealers are looking to have solved?
Yeah, there's a handful of challenges that we see customers are coming to us looking for our help. One of those is that, you know, they might see a dip in their deal conversion. And when they look at that, what they're seeing is, you know, the people on the floor, you know, they might be shortcutting, you know, one part of the process or another within their sales process. And so what they're looking for is a way to sort of standardize that sales process and give their sales managers a way to understand who, you know, who's following the process and who isn't. And so that's one thing our tool can do for them. Or we also see, you know, people might be, it's a field where there's a lot of turnover. And so they're looking for a way to bring, you know, a simple process that can bring people up to speed faster, or even hire people that are outside of the auto industry. And so having a simple standardized process helps with that. And then profitability, of course, is a huge one. So that, you know, they might be looking to, you know, with you know, making everything is automated, you know, through our platform, they can run their dealership on fewer people. So that's kind of one thing they're trying to do. And then, or they might be looking for our lending to help them increase their approvals or increase backend. And so, you know, our dealerships are seeing 60% higher backend growths. So there's all like customer satisfaction, of course, is a big one. That's, you know, drives the whole online experience. But that's some of the challenges that dealers are coming to us and looking for help.
Do you think as an industry, we should expect to have less people or fewer people in the dealership driven by AI over the next, you know, couple of years? You think that's like a reality? Or do you just think it makes the current people a lot more efficient?
I mean, I do think that technology can make that process more simplified. It can create tools that mean people don't have to have as much specialization. So I do think that will be, I think that's just a natural part of of improving technology, you know, processes through technology. When it comes to like generative AI, and do I see that, you know, replacing? Honestly, I think for these types of experiences, like consumers want, they want to have a human touch. You know, it's the second biggest purchase of their life. So I'm sure it will be, you know, it might be something that's augmented in terms of the, like a tool for people to use. But personally, I don't see it as going to take away half the people in the dealership or something like that.
Yeah.
What's your vision, right? Again, zooming out and before we wrap up, what do you think over the next 5 years, if you could say what success looks like for you, your goals to impact the industry, what does that look like?
Yeah, for us, you know, we're trying to build the best car buying and selling experience that's powered by the most differentiated financing offers there are. And so for us, like we're still very early in that. Like think about these transactions, they're, you know, super complicated, regulated, state specific. And so we think of that as like, that's something that we're excited. That's a challenge we're excited to get up and go tackle. And then lending, you know, think about that as like, you know, anytime someone pays back a loan and they pay that loan back in full, they way overpaid for that loan. And so it's our job, like what we see is we want to build models that can much more accurately predict whether that person's going to pay back. And if they are, we can give them a much lower rate.
Alex Rouse, this was awesome. Really appreciate the insight. Of course, if anyone wants to learn more, upstart.com/dealers. I'm looking at the website right now. We'll throw the link in the show notes as well. So if you want to go, just click below. You can get there as well. Alex, appreciate you coming on, man. This was awesome.
Yep. Thanks, Yossi. Really engaging conversation. Appreciate being here.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Please give the podcast a rating, consider subscribing to the show, and check the show notes for links to what we talked about. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you guys next time.